I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
Are you serious?
Comedian Heather Gold has been described as a geek humorist, and we'll see if she can do a version of the Aristocrats, or maybe not, in a matter of moments. I look around me, and I see Jeff Deal. I see Steve Robles, and look who's back.
It's so good to be back. New York's fabulous, but it doesn't have the three of you.
You're
so you
hearing Diana
lacking.
Brown.
Wow. That's true. That's me. And speaking of New York, on August 3rd, the New York Post published an article by Thomas Hargrove and Guida H. Stemple III summarizing the results of a poll on 9/11 by Scripps Howard, Ohio University. According to the poll, one in three Americans suspect federal officials assisted in the 9/11 terrorist attacks or took no action to stop them so the United States could go to war in the Middle East. 16% of Americans speculate that secretly placed explosives, not burning passenger jets, brought down the Twin Towers. Think 3-in-1 sounds high? Well, Lee Hamilton, former vice chairman of the 9/11 commission, says that number sounds about right. His committee's findings concluded that federal officials bungled their attempts to prevent but did not participate in the attacks by al-Qaeda 5 years ago. The survey also found that people who regularly use the internet and not mainstream media are significantly more likely to believe in 9/11 conspiracies.
So I guess the question is, if one out of three believe this, how many of those support having done that? Because I have to assume that some of the people who believe this probably voted for George Bush, given those statistics.
Yes, actually.
Don't you think?
You're saying that some people supported him.
Some people said, think that it was done and
then said, okay.
Yeah, it was a good idea. Or it's just something that they can store in the back
of
their minds.
Especially since it was probably mostly filled with Jews.
That's right.
You know, Jews.
New York City, that's right.
It's just a bunch of Jews in New York City.
That's right. That could be the case.
You know, it's also the same number of Americans who fail to fucking wash their hands after wiping their ass.
Where did you get this poll about the hands and the wiping ass thing?
I just pulled it out of my ass, but that's what I guesstimate.
I think the pollster is up in there as well.
Well, it's true that
the pollster stuck.
85% of all statistics are made up on the spot. So,
is that the case?
Yeah. Just keep that in mind.
Does this mean anything to us that so many people believe it? I mean, was it 50% don't believe in evolution? I think. Was about 80% believe in heaven and hell.
All it means is that you can't just write it off as a fringe movement.
Sure you can. I consider people who believe in heaven and hell a fringe movement.
Are you as much of a fucking idiot as you sound?
Well, you know, it seems that
fringe. Maybe.
Fringe. Okay? It's very easily defined.
Did I say fridge?
Fridge movement.
Yeah, it's a fridge.
You know, when you open the refrigerator and the light isn't on, you know something's wrong. It seems that the 9/11 attacks being an inside job, that theory has become as popular as, you know, people believing the federal government assisted in the Kennedy assassination or that...
I think that's over 50%.
I think so. Well, you know, a lot of people also believe President Nixon had Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and Jim Morrison killed. Maybe he just didn't like the letter J.
I think all three of them flew the planes into the fucking buildings. What do you think about that?
That could be the secret, actually. They've been kept alive in a...
to fly the planes?
Secret
Al-Qaeda
trained, cell. And trained. Brainwashed, yeah. Brainwashed and trained.
I'm holding out for the leprechaun fucking theory. Like, the evil leprechaun from the movies, like, managed to, like, fly the jets. Both of them.
We will be talking about this in a more serious vein, by the way, on September 10th, I believe. Probably people will get to listen to it on September 11th on the very day.
On the very day.
With a few experts.
5 years.
Hopefully we'll get a couple experts. If you are an expert, or if you think you're an expert, don't bother me, because I'll probably get all kinds of tweaked out people insisting that they should
be.
First of all, we are looking for both advocates and cynics regarding the theory. And I do have something to report, actually. Popular Mechanics, they did investigate this. Thank you. And they had a very brief article on this, and now they have a book coming out.
What did they say?
And so I got in contact with them, and they said, we don't want to debate anybody who believes in it. So
why don't we just have them come on and like just read a statement?
They won't come on. Anyway, they're in New York.
What did they say, though?
You have to go into it. I mean, it's a mechanics
magazine. You have to be a person who reads to really understand it.
Well, and if you are reading, there is a book, Conspiracy Theories, Secrecy and Power in America and Culture. And the man who wrote this said he was not surprised that conspiracy theories exist. But, you know, a year ago, people who considered that this was a conspiracy were considered a wingnut. And now this seems to be taking hold of the public.
Well, yeah, because there's momentum.
Yeah, they've gone up from wingnut to douchebag. That's a rung up the ladder. How you feel about being part of that party?
Douchebag might be below.
No, douchebag is actually a useful thing.
Yeah, douche guzzler. That's what you are. That's what you are.
Who's he talking to? Nobody, nobody can see out there.
Well, they don't know that he's talking to himself.
He's looking in a mirror.
He's looking at Jeff.
I'm looking at our producer, Jeff.
Don't piss off old man Deal, all right?
Swallow any fucking jizz lob of fucking conspiracy that comes down the pike. And you know why? I was thinking about it and I figured it out. Because you're not a fucking human being. Actually, no, you are a human being, but the problem is that you weren't even fucking here, asshat. You were not fucking here down in the fucking trenches with us. You were gallivanting, backpacking in fucking Europe.
He wasn't in America.
He wasn't
9/11
even
happened?
Fucking in America. And the whole thing's just an abstraction to him. And he's fucking...
That's how unpatriotic can that be?
I don't know. Maybe he had...
Gives me some objectivity, don't it?
You weren't here to watch the tower come down with us?
He had perspective,
all
right? Too much fucking perspective. That's your fucking problem, man. It's just a fucking... Everything's a theory to you. You don't know what it was like when we were fucking here getting bombed. Getting our fucking ass bombed.
You got bombed, huh?
I got bombed, I fucking tell you.
It's that pollster up.
I was in Mill Valley. Really you're bombed now, man. I was in Mill Valley. I didn't get bombed.
Well,
nor did I in the Inner Sunset.
Well, I was drinking a lot
of
that time,
I did have a nephew, a second nephew, or I don't know, something like that.
Someone in the tower?
Yeah.
I mean, most of us knew somebody that, like...
I know people who live nearby, actually.
Yeah.
This is so typical,
it's irrelevant,
man.
As to, sadness we might feel is irrelevant to the question
you're a fucking skeptic, too. Don't act that like you're not.
I'm a skeptic, but I'm not a cynic.
But he's not a wingnut.
No, he's a douche guzzler now. Crawling up the ladder.
Everybody does. We're here with Heather Gold. She's a comedian and performer. Her performances have included I Look Like an Egg, But I Identify as a Cookie, and The C Word, in collaboration with Jen Kober. That's two different things, actually, the cookie and the C Word. They don't necessarily go together.
No.
Although, I like cookies with. But her popular blog, Subvert.com, features video clips that get passed around. And she's currently working on The Law Project, an open-source comedy directed by Mark Ruthier. Am I saying that correctly?
Sure.
More or less.
Ruthier, I know Mark.
Yeah?
Do you?
Yeah, I did a project with him, The Bone Man of Benares.
Oh, you worked in The Bone Man with Ron
Benares.
Campbell.
I've heard good things about that.
I did the visuals, all the videos.
Oh, you're kidding. You know what? He wanted you to come to one of my shows because he was interested in you maybe doing video for the show. Visuals. It's fortuitous that we...
Hey, let's just have a negotiation about getting other gigs together for people. I'm for
Skype in your agent here, Jeff, so we can get the numbers taken care of.
You're Jeff Deal.
That's me.
Well, we'll talk after.
And we'll talk, and she's also written for Alan Comics. And tell Alan that I want to get together.
All right, sure.
She performed at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, The Purple Onion in San Francisco, Alt Comedy in Toronto, and all over the place. And welcome, Heather.
Thanks
for coming on the
here.
Show. So naturally, our first thought is that you should just give us your version of The Aristocrats, and we'll leave, and we'll come back in 15 minutes.
Oh, my God. It's so not my kind of a joke.
You don't have to do
But I have to say, I love Sarah Silverman's the best.
Wasn't she good?
That's what everyone says.
And I really wish Jesus' Magic was as... I wanted it to be more like 15 minutes of that bit in The Aristocrats. It was so awesome.
Yeah.
I hate to... I can just quote... I'm into a sort of hypertext comedy where I just cite other comedians. And I mean, maybe it's better than stealing from them. But I just heard an interview the other day. It's more homage because I thought it was so great. She was
just be a comedian. What about a comedian J or something? Comedian jockey?
Oh, like, yeah. I'll just DJ other people's jokes.
Yeah.
That's me.
Absolutely. Just mix them together.
I didn't write anything.
Remix them.
I'm a connoisseur of comedy. I don't really write. Yeah. No, she had some great lines. She was telling Elvis Mitchell about whenever she hears music come on, she uses it as a line. Or I guess she was playing poker and some song came on. She said, "Oh yeah, I was raped to this song." I love that.
So anyway, there's this idea that geeks don't do humor, and I was listening to an interview with you on NPR, and they were sort of playing you as a techno-culture kind of humorist. I mean, it's always been like geeky jokes. Did you know Saint Silicon? Did you ever...
I know Tom's...
He used to do a great religious service with the Holorith and the
Now I know
so
the
forth.
Silicon Valley Tarot. Yeah. I don't know Saint Silicon.
He was pretty funny, but I think actually the old geek humor used to like revolve basically around we know something that these other people don't, and we can just use these words and laugh about them. How did you come to the geek arena and start making
the
jokes
same way
about it?
Every other person becomes a geek, they high school rejection.
Right.
I like to read a lot. I liked my little books. I didn't have access to crack or any other drugs, so I like to, you know, just put my
that can really kill your sense of humor, actually. Crack.
The crack, really? I'm glad to
badly
hear
badly
go there.
Named, actually, because I mean, generally,
yeah, because crack, you know, in Europe, crack is
cracking
great
up,
fun.
Cracked.
That's great. Crack. So it's great fun. The Irish would say, but no, it's not crack. It actually itself, not so much fun. So you could maybe do like a I don't know. Geek for dummies. Like how it's become very popular to be a geek now. It's such a reverse
it's
thing.
It's chic to be, well, to know, I guess to know how to fix your computer is helpful now. Now people don't mind us so much, I guess, when you're, you know, they're nice to you. That's the, I guess, the old cliche when they want you to fix their computer. I was always geeky. I didn't know I would have anything to do with computers until the web, until I used the net for the first time in 1994, and I was like, oh, this is how the movies are going to get distributed into the film business. And then I was like, this is how it's not going to be five guys distributing everything. And then from that, I was totally into it.
So you're talking about sort of feeling like a geek in high school or whatever, and then
feeling, yeah, I was
being a geek,
outcast.
Being a geek in high school, and then I mean your humor isn't just geek humor; it's also Jewish humor and it's lesbian humor. So you hit the trifecta there.
Yeah,
being an outsider,
all the empowered,
the golden triangle,
all the empowered populations. You know, I like to go for those juicy demographics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just exactly what
so
it feels.
How frequently do you play Mississippi?
I perform here pretty often. I have about five shows this month.
In Mississippi?
Oh, I thought you said, do I perform here frequently?
No.
Boy, did I ever mishear you. Haven't been to Mississippi yet. Yeah. Austin, Atlanta.
All right.
Kansas. I was in Kansas not long ago.
Do they love you in Kansas?
They loved me in Kansas.
In Rhode
Island.
What's the matter with Kansas, anyway?
You know, we had a whole chat about them. They were confused about the whole evolution issue. I was at the medical school, Kansas University.
Who was confused about the evolution issue? The students at the medical school?
That's their kind of rap these days, right, in Kansas?
They don't teach it anymore over there,
they're not supposed to teach it. Exactly. You know, they're not as dumb as the press gives them credit for. Mainstream media, you basically get, you know, the catchiest, hookiest story, and then that's the impression of everyone in the place. It's like, you know... Our version of the red states is what they get of gay pride, right? It's like one picture of something incredibly outrageous and campy or kinky.
Right.
And they're like, decide that's the whole population. Not that there's anything wrong with being outrageously campy and kinky, but it's just not always representative.
I always thought in some ways those conservative areas are more fun for the freaky people because you're really desperate.
Oh, I think it's also a I think it creates.
It's always the underground there.
It's the fact that's Mark, my friend Mark Glazer, you can hear, by the way, who's came to hang out.
A voice in the background there.
Yes.
You live in Kansas?
No, I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri.
Say you lived in Kansas because that's your credibility.
I visited there enough. Yeah. Missouri is right next to Kansas, so not much.
Really?
Now, is it Missouri or Missouri?
My mom says Missouri, but there's actually a split. If you're rural, you say Missouri. And if you're not, you say Missouri if you're from one of the cities, Kansas City or St. Louis. So.
When do you call it misery?
Thank you.
Yeah, whenever I go back.
As soon as you become... As soon as you gain self-consciousness or at age of 5, so, after like, you know, just running in the grass barefoot isn't enough to keep you happy all summer.
Wheat, though, mostly, isn't it? They don't have grass. They have like wheat, corn.
There's some grass in Missouri, I have to say, yes.
In the misery? It's a good...
In misery.
I think that's where most kinky people probably live because it's so repressed. It doesn't take very much. I never really wanted to be that provocative until law school in the Midwest. And I just wanted to make...
Where did you go?
Everyone talk about sex all the time.
Where did you go to law school?
It was backlash to law school.
Also, you're not having a lot of sex in law school. I was in Northwestern in Chicago.
Yeah, well, Chicago's actually pretty...
I don't know. I guess it is.
I've had a good time the few times I've gone there. But
were you in law school?
You know the right people. No,
I didn't
stay away from.
I was too busy. They don't let you out of the school. Once I went out and kind of hung out in the city, there was amazing stuff. There's a great comedy scene and theater scene and art scene. But I wasn't as familiar. I'd grown up reading these Archie and Betty comic books, and I didn't realize that. I thought it was a comic book. And then I got to law school. It's like, no, this is America. Like a lot of it is like this comic book. That was my experience of Illinois.
So you went to law school, and now you're doing this open source culture law project thing. So when I was listening to this interview on NPR, you were talking about how funny the whole .com craziness was. But what's funny about open source or Web 2.0?
Oh, it's just more that that's interesting. Those are two different questions. What's funny about open source? I call it that because I let the audience participate in the live shows that I do, and I'm just kind of influenced by the idea of openness. And I thought, what if I didn't write all the jokes? What if I'm not the only funny person? Because I was doing this internet roast during the boom, the .com boom, where I was making fun of stuff at South by Southwest, and people in the audience were hilarious. I mean, I forget one thing. I was like, I was doing some joke, like, anyone else here have repetitive stress injury? And so I was like, we can't raise our hands. I was like, that's awesome. So I thought, you know, that's pretty good. So I just thought, what if I structured, what if I was more like, you know, DJing everyone or structuring for everyone and not only writing all the stuff? I mean, so... It was more a way of just enjoying. I always loved, you know, people yelling stuff out at screens that were funny. And so it's been a way of trying to work for some of that. In terms of
Mystery Science 3000 for
comedy. That's part of the geek instinct, or like a commentary on stuff. But also inclusiveness, because I'm kind of a dorky, earnest person, and I like earnestness. And supposedly that makes you geeky as opposed to hip and cool, where you can be alone and very... important but inaccessible to everyone. I didn't like exclusion. It didn't work for me, so I don't really want to put it onto other people.
Right, and that's how you come off on stage in general also, is, you know, just sort of like finding your comfort zone there, and you're engaged in a conversation with people.
Yeah.
Even if you're doing a monologue.
Right. No, I like people.
She bakes for
a lot.
The audience.
Right.
With the audience.
I've baked over 20,000. You get baked?
Yeah.
Oh. I was never good at that.
I think her heart's in the same place, though.
I think her heart's
so afraid that I would lose whatever touch on reality I had. I was always too afraid of drugs. Like, I was afraid I'd like them. Also, I had no money to get them. So, I had reading. I'm telling you, my drug was books. I was just like, I could check out without drugs really easily. My brain trained itself to dissociate without any substances. Very cheap.
So tell us a little more about the law school project and what are you doing with it?
So in 90 minutes, I teach all of law school with the audience and at the same time tell the story of how I became a comic and why I'm not a lawyer, and try to encourage and empower people along the way to understand that the law is not some kind of you know, thing written in stone that they have to accept, that it's a system created by people. It's supposed to serve us. It doesn't, like many systems anymore, seem to serve people but itself, and that it's up to us to make our lives as we want them to be. And it's just a simple idea, but it's something I think people forget a lot of the time, because we look at laws like, you know, someone hands you a contract and it's got lots of fine print on it and it's 10 pages long and it looks scary. You look at it and you think, this is important and I have to say yes. You just feel like immediately,
right.
Like someone's got something over your head. Some like, do this.
Authority.
Do this. Can you do this? I'm in charge. Okay. And you know why? Because a lawyer said you have to do this.
And you have a shiny pen, so I better sign.
So it's my theory that no one's really reading it. They're just hearing that voice in their head going, oh, I have to do it. First of all, read them. No one reads them because they're afraid they won't understand
them. I've gotten used to reading them. And they're not really that hard, generally. They suck, usually, entertainment.
If you read it, you've already saved like $25,000 of your first year of law school by reading it alone. Most people don't read them. It's not that hard. Read the thing and then take a pen and cross out all the parts you don't like and write in what you'd like. I mean, a lot of what I'm doing is just trying to, a lot of what I think it is giving people permission to be reasonable and human with stuff that we've created to see off, be all formal standing, because, you know, how else are you going to charge, what is it, an hour now? 300, 500 an hour?
Right, they create the intuitive.
You have to have a system that makes you feel all smart. I mean, geeks aren't the only ones who like to feel they know something someone else doesn't know. Everybody has their own language. Law school is res ipsa loquitur, ipso facto, de jure de facto. We've got all these little lines and things we say, and, you know.
Well, how are you open sourcing the project? How does that work?
I first of all write the show with the audience, so I've been influenced by what I've learned from people who write software, so I don't have a finished show that I write by myself in a room and then do it. I actually create it by what theater calls workshops, basically with an audience.
Right.
And so that's part of it. Is there part of what ends up in the show? Some of the things people say end up in the show, and then hopefully modules come out of that where I'll be able to keep an element that stays open. I guess I sound like object oriented coding, so it changes in a relevant way to the audience depending on who's there. It's just an improv thing.
I read that you said people releasing software in beta really influenced you. That I don't have to have this perfect piece before I step on stage.
And someone else has something to contribute to it, so it takes some of the strain off of me feeling like I'm the source of everything and I'm all-knowing and all-perfect. It's because people are smart and interesting, and you can't do comedy anyway alone. It's pretty ridiculous for the most part, so you have to know if it's connecting, if you're doing it live. So that's part of it. And then ideas come out of that. I've worked, you know, where people give me feedback after every workshop I do, and then that changes. And then I have something that's pretty finished but still has chunks where I'm always going to, because I'm a naturally tangential person.
So is there a point where you take it into a theater or on a stage?
Yeah. There's definitely a place where I say, now it's done. And the more, I guess, success I've had, and the more I've wanted to be able to work with the support of theaters, because I did the first show, Cookie, not even in a theater, and there was a lot that was great about that, but it also meant I discovered the hard way recreating everything you have in a theater to make. There's practical reasons, turns out, everything. Right. That really surprised me. After I was like, oh, there's a reason it's painted black all in the theater, and the lights are stuck in the ceiling and everything. I mean, I ended up having to redo stuff.
Was your first show in a hotel?
I did it in a restaurant.
Okay.
Even before I got to the hotel, before I outgrew the restaurant, I did Cookie for the first time after I worked. I did the very, very first ones when it was called Live Naked Truth. My early idea was that it would be like intellectual burlesque, and I would get more vulnerable as the show went on. And so it was really like funny, mean stand-up at the beginning, and I got more and more vulnerable, and then I discovered in theater you can't be mean at the beginning. The way it works in comedy where you're just mean the whole time. So then John Sims, I won a residency there. So I did a few there, and then I did it at Shea Spencer, which has this built-in, it's in San Francisco. It's a very nice restaurant, very like Condé Nast Travel and Leisure magazine rated restaurant with these built-in wood-burning brick ovens. And I baked chocolate chip cookies over cherry and almond wood. But I ended up in a restaurant practically because they had chairs. Seriously.
Good venue. One of those places with chairs.
Well,
always.
I was trying to find a place to do the show, and the theaters took forever to get into, and they didn't know who I was, and I didn't want to wait a year. I've kind of been around all the startup stuff. It's like, you know, why expect anyone else to make it work? So I'll just do it somewhere. And I found these lofts, and the lofts were cool. They had no chairs in them. I'm like, I'm not going to, how am I going to get 200 chairs and have to pay for the chairs? I have to get the chairs here. who has chairs? And I was driving home, and I was like, a restaurant has chairs, and they're closed on Monday.
Perfect.
Perfect. Let's break for a few minutes. People can sit in a chair and listen to some music, and we'll be right back with Heather Gold.
Are you serious?
We're meeting and right in the middle of speaking. Like all at once I wake up from something I just said moments ago. I can't believe my ears, is there an echo in here? I spring up in my chair, speaking out the truth I dare. Didn't I just say that?
Didn't I just say that?
This meeting, it's given me this feeling I didn't know how to deal with. And so I've just decided to myself, I've stopped hiding to myself and finally talk about it. So then I stood and shouted in the biggest conference room. Didn't I just say that?
Didn't I just say that?
Didn't I just say that? So what am I so afraid of? I'm afraid of sticking up for the credit I deserve here. Didn't I just say that? Is made of. Though I can do the math, I've never been one to kiss ass. Believe me, you really don't have to doubt me. I only want to do a good job, and if I can't, then go away I will. But I think better still, I'd better leave and start my own thing. Yes, I think I'd better go. See you at my IPO. Yes, I just said that.
Yes, I just said that.
Didn't I just say that? So what am I so afraid of? Just afraid of sticking up for the credit I deserve here.
Didn't I just say that?
Isn't that what work is made of? No, it worries me to say I've never spoken up this way.
Back.
You know, I loved your website, and I have to admit, I was pretty impressed with the trip to the American Girl store. Can you share that with us?
I wish I had more video of that.
So do I.
I gotta go back with those little cameras, because at the time I only had a really, like, I have this pretty good size VX2100. Just to prove I'm a geek, I memorized the nerd, the acronym of the camera. It was too big. It is. Do you know about American Girl? Have you
heard
about
it? I do, but not everyone does. So hip us to American Girl.
So this is the thing. Is I love how middle America, you know, people are like, no, those people are normal and weird and full of fetishes. Like, this is a fetish. This is a full-on fetish is what it is.
Prompted by their mommies, I think.
Well, there's some good stuff about it, too, I think. I went to this mall. I had time to kill before a show I was doing in L.A., and I went to this big new, I guess they call it a mall. It's more like a Disney-esque entertainment plaza. And I was in one of the stores, and this group of about 8 girls walked in, between the ages of maybe 8 and 10, with their mommies. And the girls were all dressed identically to these dolls they were carrying. I'd actually heard about American Girl a few years before at a CD-ROM company I worked at, because they just heard dollar signs around American Girl, but I'd never seen it in action. And these girls were really cool, but like the identical outfits were a little freaky. And then they weren't even from LA. They had driven from Northern California on a pilgrimage, they informed me, with the girls and the doll. So now I'm intrigued. Now I'm like, now I have to go there. Then they said there's only two American Girl stores in the country, and one of them's here. And they're about all like that kind of high look, you know, when they were telling me about it.
Eyes a bit too bright and shiny.
Like yeah. Going to see the dead. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, like I'm going to...
Or Fish Heads.
Fish Heads?
The band Fish. The former band Fish. People would follow.
Yeah, I'm not hip enough. Sorry.
It's
I don't...
Okay.
No, now
stick,
you know,
stick with the dolls.
Stick with the dolls.
They go into you go into the store and it's totally like... I don't even know how to explain this. It's like... I'm overwhelmed. It's beyond Disney World. It is kind of like they've merged merchandising, interactive entertainment with home play in your room. And like, it's just this really incredible connection of things. So these dolls, they have dolls. They're all historic figures, but it's not just a doll you buy. They give you, there's a story with the doll and a name and a personality. And then when you walk into the store, there's dioramas of each of these girls. They all have a name with their and their packages, of course. You can buy them and you can buy outfits for all of them of the period. So, and they have, you know, all kinds of different races too. But so, of course, since they're all historic, it's like slave girl and freed slave girl and Indian princess and uneducated. They kind of put the colonialism light L-I-T-E in there, and it's all in pink though. With hair things, and then you go through this. They've built not only dioramas of each of the dolls and accessories for each of the dolls, but experiences you can have with your American Girl doll, because these girls, because I talked to them, really like their dolls. And the part of it that was cool was they didn't want Barbies. They wanted these dolls. And I have to say, if you had to pick between Barbie and these dolls are they're pricier, but like more human. Like they don't look, they look like little girls. They don't look like weird, warped, you know, sex mannequins or something.
Were you, by the way, were you in that Tiffany Schlein movie about Barbie?
I was supposed to be in the Tiffany Schlein movie. She wanted my Microsoft or the Christians, Apple or the Jews thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, no. But
anyway, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, she's got the whole Barbie doll story down. Of course, created by a Zoftig Jewish lady. It's the only person who would ever create, with breast cancer later, who would ever create Barbie. Someone who looks the opposite of her. That's how it is. That's the thing. People
like
always
a Long Island dream come true.
So, like, when you go into one of these places where the girls are dealing with the dolls and so forth, and there's always a lot of pathos connected to dolls. That's why they're always appearing in horror movies and so forth.
Terrifying.
Do you sense that? I mean, maybe with the parents more than the kids.
It's more the weirdness of the social. The weirdest thing in the whole place is the picture on my site, which is these girls can. And I had a whole diatribe you just led me right off of. That was good of you. About Jews and movies. Sorry, it's hard. You know that need to be like Jews and movies will be next. I'm going to finish one thread and then do the next. I can't believe you're watching me.
This is what comedians.
You watch me rewire my brain. This is so hard for me to stay on one topic.
We can hear the synapses re.
This is so hard. Oh my God.
Reminder: Jews and movies.
Are you making me stay?
Was the first part?
No, I have to stay present, and I might forget something. This is my OCD. Okay.
We have to let her do it on her own. This is
okay.
I'm
enabling. Mr. Deal is right.
The weirdest thing about the dolls, I would say, the pathos is the real world. It's not the doll. First of all, the pathos is always us. Anything we see is just a chance to release how we feel about us.
You mean Chucky isn't real? Oh, sorry.
So the dolls, you can get your doll's haircut if you're an 8-year-old girl from Winnetka or from Atherton, and you bring her to the mall in LA and you sit her down and strap her in a little chair with a strap, and then you can...
Because she might get up.
That's right. And you can have, you know, only African-American women working there with their own hair braided or whatever, of course. The hair is very different, I think, black hair than doll hair. They're black dolls, but the black dolls, I don't know how black their hair was. But, you know, with a toothbrush, combing the hair and trimming the hair of this doll. And I took a picture of this and I was just like... This is where our economy, the service economy, has gone to. Is can you imagine that you don't just work for white people and you don't just work in their homes? You work for their kids. You don't even work for their kids. You work for the kids' doll.
Right.
That's how we're expanding capitalism's new level now. Is we've run out of white people to serve. We only have their dolls left. It's only open market left to us. So the Jews in the movies, you were the segue tangent there was about the paranoia people have about how Jews control the movies and blah blah blah. Right. Well, Jews did build Hollywood. I'm perfectly proud of that. And I don't think a lot of other minority groups other than Jews get the incredible self-hatred in that. They just keep saying like, yes, they're doing this for white people and that for white people. They don't get that Jews like have managed to excise themselves utterly out of movies. There are no Jews in the movies. It's like, we're going to make a Holocaust movie as long as it's about a Gentile, good-looking blonde guy, no problem. Yeah. Like, there's so it's just this weird self-hatred thing, like the Barbie or the, right. you know, and that's who makes Beaver Cleaver is the person who is the opposite of that and would never be allowed in that neighborhood either.
I remember a friend of mine whose name I won't say. When she turned 16, her mother said, you can have a party or you can have your nose done. And if you don't have your nose done, you're going to regret it. And she, of course, chose the party.
Oh, she's very glad. I guess you could get your doll's nose done, too. I didn't see that. Maybe that's going to be their expansion. It's going to be like liposuction for American Girl. They had also a cafe with little chairs so you could put the grown guys serving the dolls, like with a menu. For the doll. It was amazing.
What was on the doll menu?
I only snuck in and took a picture.
Yeah, what does a doll eat?
I wish I could know. It was not a cheap menu, though. I did look at it.
Maybe they're like trying to reinforce that, you know, women don't eat kind of thing with the little girls.
But the mothers were like, we feel good about it because it's historic and they're learning. And the dolls, they are more human than Barbie. I mean, there are some good, like, I actually got kind of verklempt. By the time I got through about eight blocks of this thing, I was like, oh my god, there's a little girl soccer player, you know, when I was a little girl. When I grew up, I was traumatized by, you know, toy stores were traumatic for me because there was a girl section and a boy section. I'm not that old, but, you know, right. for me to go into the boy section and ask for something was like I was committing some awful heresy. Like, I was not a real, I never thought I was a real girl because, you know, I liked things that girls weren't allowed to like, right. supposedly.
I also noticed on your website you talked about the hero's journey and that there aren't that many stories about girls' hero's journeys.
Right. I think I named the only two I could think of.
Yeah, I think you did. Wizard of Oz was one. Yeah. And the other was, let's see, Philip Pullman's Dark Materials trilogy.
Have you guys read that?
I must now.
I'm not even into science fiction. I'm going to guess you guys know more about it than me. I really don't, but it's amazing. It's amazing. I cannot wait to see this movie. Hopefully they don't screw it up. It's really brilliant. It's like Harry Potter by a super literate person who's much more sophisticated, and there's a lot of theological and scientific issues and a lot about authority, and it's like basically this huge screed against the church, like in a really intense way. It's supernatural. I couldn't even begin to make it concise other than it's really great, and the hero of it is this girl, Lyra, who is an orphan, of course. Like, all heroes have to be orphaned, but they usually just lose their mother. Usually there's no mother. That's what happens. There's only
father. I think maybe some people identified Molly in Neuromancer as being a female hero.
Oh, see, you have more of a... You've read more of this stuff, so I should try Neuromancer?
Yeah, I might check it out. Maybe although, really, the main character is Case, so it might not... I might have a bad case there.
Yeah, girls just haven't had a lot of stories that are about... You know, where we haven't been perceived as actors. We've been perceived sort of as passive or manipulators because that's sort of been the option open. Because if you were active, well, then you weren't being a girl, you were being a boy, really, until, like, 10 years ago. So it's kind of a new... era we're opening up. I kind of joke about it in the law show. It's like, you know, here you go, hero's journey for a girl. But usually the thing about women is because of the way we're socialized, we don't want to, you don't have to kill someone and that would be awful and you'd separate yourself from them. So you don't want to like do anything bad to mom and dad. So you have to bring them with you. So your journey is like really long.
And you're heavily encumbered.
You are, and you have to emotionally, socially change them, which I've managed to do pretty well with my parents. All right. But it's 10 years.
It takes a village to raise a...
takes a child to raise a family, yeah. Takes an obnoxious, rebellious kid to get... You know, aren't you one of those... You guys must be those kids. Anyone who's been an outsider is the one who pulls the whole family forward. Haven't you been through it? Or it's only women who do this?
I think I pulled the family apart, probably.
Apart? But they didn't come with you. Did yours pull apart, Jeff?
Well, it managed to do that on its own. I kind of, you know, ejected myself pretty early on.
That's one option.
Pulled the ripcord.
There's the ejection option. But, like, I used to envy Dave Eggers really badly because I'd be like, God, if my parents would... died and left me all that insurance money, lucky.
And with a little brother, and then what a story you'd have to tell.
I'm just like, I could start my own magazine. That sounds like the two perfect things that have to happen in order to start it. One is here's the funding. Two is we'll get out of your way.
He's had an
idea. You don't have to worry about disappointing us.
He's had an ideal life. I think we can all agree.
Oh, I'm hoping you would understand the irony in what I'm saying. But yes, it did occur to me. The pathetic thing is it has occurred to me more than one occasion. My parents will be listening to this going, you wanted us to die. I mean, see, I'm an album. That's the problem is now I have to worry about
that. That's the problem
with
being a humorist in general.
Well, I think everybody at one point screams at your parents, I was adopted, I hate you. But it doesn't mean you take that to the grave with you.
I don't think mine ever did.
So do you ever get heckled or piss off an audience or anything like that?
I do have people talk to me, but I kind of want them to talk to me. If they're heckling, right. It happens a couple times if someone's really drunk. I don't play like the ha-ha hole kind of clubs where that happens all the time.
Right.
And if it's going to, it's like, in the kind of audiences I have, I've only had one or two people, and usually I engage them and I try to let them know that it's kind of quiet in the kitchen time or whatever it is. Like we can continue the show when it's not about, unless you want to come do the show or whatever it is. It's just practically speaking, you can't keep talking. Because the thing is, if I'm doing a solo show and a lot of the point of what I'm doing is trying to connect everyone, if I'm nasty to somebody, that kills the whole vibe. I mean, it really would make... That's more of a traditional comedy club, in which case you need to be really sharp and mean really fast and get them to shut the fuck up, basically. I can say fuck on your show, right?
You can say anything you like. And in fact, let people know what you're up to. We're drawing to a close.
I just came from a church thing, so I was like, yeah, that's a whole other story.
And you go to church?
No, we were invited as a potential Web 2.0 consultant to a church in San Jose. We didn't even get into that. But I know. Well, maybe I'll blog about it, and you'll hear. I'm going to probably do a vlog about it. It was very interesting. The journey. They're rebranding churches these days. I learned that this morning, so that people like them more. So what I'm up to is my new talk show is called The Heather Gold Show. Very inventive name. We'll be on the Friday, the 18th is the next one at the JCC here in San Francisco, and I'll be getting the podcast up and asking Jeff about how to do that after this interview. And
you guys just go right ahead and get
your
it
agent's
all worked
actually
out
on the phone
and
now.
And
Jeff,
that'll be online for people to listen to and be regular, and that's at heathergold.com. And the rest of my dates are on my site. I'm going to be at Stanford, I think, next week, and I'll be with Nice Jewish Girls Gone Bad at the Red Devil Lounge, and then at Larkspur Cafe in Marin within the next week. And that should be a great show. I'll be doing that with Betsy Salkind and the Diamond Daggers and Susanna Perlman from New York and somebody named Scott the Blue Bunny, a gay big blue bunny. So it should be right up your alley.
Totally up mine. And what can I say? We'll also have a link to Heather Gold on the website, areyouseriousradio.com. And we'll have to have you in again because there seems like there are more things to talk about. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?